How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Museums don't need to be contained in four walls. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Bronzeville was the site of a cultural renaissance in Chicago in the 1930s through the 1950s. And back then, a place called the Mecca Flats was a key hub where generations of artists gathered, shared stories, poems, and prose. Initially built in 1892 as a hotel for visitors to the World's Fair, Mecca Flats was later converted into apartments to serve Chicago's African-American community. Notable Chicagoans like poet Gwendolyn Brooks called it home. Even luminaries Louis Armstrong, Dinah Washington, and Richard Wright walked its hallways. But in 1952, the building was demolished, making way for an expansion of the Illinois Institute of Technology, and Mecca's hundreds of residents were evicted. Now, the historic apartment building will be reincarnated through public art. Chicago's Floating Museum will pay homage to the Mecca Flats and confront the history of urban renewal and displacement. I sat down with Fahim Majid, artist and co-director of the Floating Museum, and Rebecca Kaufman, curator of religion and community history architecture at the Chicago History Museum. Fahim began by describing what the Floating Museum is.
We're about a 10-year-old arts organization that came out of an art collective.
Okay.
And we basically, we all are educators and artists in our own rights. And we basically think of the city as the museum, the neighborhoods as the galleries, and the citizens as the cultural producers. Mm. So we move around the city, often on the south and west sides, bringing, you know, or working with art producers, cultural producers in that area to bring support, along with a couple of things, like 30-foot inflatables sometimes.
Yeah, when you say you move around the city, you mean that literally.
Because literally.
You refer to these as drifting sculptures?
Yes.
Tell me more.
So one of our programs is our inflatable monuments program. And we oftentimes, instead of, you know, there's culture on every inch of the city. You know, we don't bring art anywhere. There's already art there.
Yes.
So we try to identify the individuals doing that. And not only will we bring a number of programs or work with them to facilitate things for residents in the area, we might also bring fiscal sponsorship, too. Mm. So I always say Miss Jenkins not only gets the 30-foot monument for free, but she's going to get a little stipend for the 20 years of the block club party she's been doing. As well.
Interesting.
So it's a sliding scale oftentimes, and we try to look to, at you know, as far south as Algale Garden or to Austin neighborhoods, which are the kind of the places we started.
Mm-hmm. So as we talk about these drifting sculptures, tell me more about how For Mecca, which is the title mm-hmm. of this exhibition, how it came about.
Yeah. Floating Museum, my art collective, we actually curated the Chicago Architecture Biennial. The previous one. And it's no coincidence that our first kind of program coming out of that is in architecture. So it's essentially we think about collections in the sense of looking at museums or personal collections and figuring out ways to bring them into public space. So it's actually kind of a mashup of a number of photographs that were made into three dimensions and put together kind of like a ghostly building. Mm. And Mecca Flats was really inspirational for us in that all of it, the things that you have mentioned, all of his contributions from his residents, and that it was erased to make space for this kind of other cultural thing that happened, specifically Crown Hall. It was built on its foundations. Mm-hmm. So in a way, we start thinking about what happens if not only Mecca Flats, but other buildings as well, from the Savoy Ballroom to the Old Regal, were able to come back to life and kind of have another moment where citizens could start to reminisce and think about what those contributions were.
Yeah. Rebecca, you know, something else I mentioned was that this the Mecca flats were initially built as a hotel. This was right around the World's Fair Expo. Tell us more about that history.
Yeah, absolutely. Mecca Flats has seen a lot of change and transition before its demolition. And as you said, you know, it was designed initially for temporary housing by Ed Brooke and Burnham in 1891. And really, it was meant to be, you know, an architectural kind of symbol of the same progress the World's Fair was trying to symbolize. And so at the time, you know, it was one of the largest apartment buildings of its kind. And it was seen as having this kind of architectural impressive stance, you know, in terms of scale and just a footprint in the neighborhood. And it also had some innovations. So, for example, it was a U-shape that had a courtyard for light that was seen to be something that would really entice a certain kind of demographic. And at the time, they were thinking this would welcome middle-class white families that wouldn't otherwise live in apartments into kind of privacy setting. And so, you know, that was who the intended audience was at the time of construction. And then after the World's Fair, that shifted dramatically. And so, you know, there weren't middle-class families moving in, but very working-class white families, first native-born and later kind of foreign-born immigrant families until, you know, the Great Migration or the first wave of the Great Migration when the neighborhood became African-American.
Yeah, tell us more about Bronzeville at that time, that Black Renaissance period before the demolition of the Mecca Flats.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's hard to overstate or understate the significance of Bronzeville during this time. The word Renaissance is exactly the correct word. You know, this is known as so many things, the Black Metropolis. I mean, just an area of culture, arts. But it's important to remember that this is a time of incredible cultural agency. But these transitions in neighborhood demographics, it's not, also not happening in a neutral setting. This is due to what is, you know, a racialized line that is legislated through racial covenants, but it's also enforced by neighboring identities. And so you have what is this really beautiful tension of cultural expression that's happening through businesses, through you know, areas along the cultural corridor known as the Stroll, where you have things like the Vendome Theater, Dreamland Ballroom, jazz spots, you know. So it's just this very critical and important time.
You know, Fahim, as Rebecca sort of walks us through that history and a vibrant time for African-Americans in the South Side of Chicago. And then I remember what you said a moment ago just about this building eventually being erased to make space for another project. What comes to mind for you as you think of the erasure of that vibrancy that she just described, and that livelihood?
I think erasure is kind of natural to a certain extent, but the problem is those buildings are connected to people, and the culture comes from the people. And if you erase buildings or knock them down without any real consideration for who's living there for sake of progress, sometimes you lose things along the way. And my partner, Andrew Shackman, who's also a co-director, always says, you know, they listen to jazz in Denmark because of Bronzeville, right? So, you know, blues, jazz, gospel, it came out of these areas. You know, Richard Wright, all these things, Gwendolyn Brooks, there are assets in Chicago. And we just, by erasing the building, we kind of don't want to do it. We want to erase that too because it has so much power, but we're just giving it away. Yeah. So it's really a way of bringing these things back to reconsider. And there's tons of people, not just Fulton Museum, that are doing this work as well. So it's people. It's architecture, but it's actually people that make this thing important. And we just want to get the people's a beacon to bring that platform to bring people back to continue to talk about it.
So how do you recreate this as an inflatable? Yeah. Talk to me about it. You can't make an exact replica,
no,
I'm sure, but
no.
Did you come close?
It's more of an emotion. It doesn't look like when you see it, it looks like a building. I mean, it's a nice sizable building. The goal was to get it to be something that could be comparable to a city lot. In a way, it has an interior, which is that very U-shaped courtyard that you were talking about. And the exterior are the facades of like the old Defender building, you know, the Savoy Ballroom on a Stroll, you know, the old Regal Theater. It's a mashup. It's almost more like a city block made into a building. And they're photographs. So we didn't scan the buildings. We actually took old photographs and gave them dimension to kind of put it together. So it is a sculpture in its own. It's a sculpture. It's an exhibit. It's a place to congregate. It's all these things mashed together as well. So it's a total mashup.
How many artists worked on this?
So my collective, we have four co-directors. We're all artists. Ariar Young is our Chicago Poet Laureate.
Yes. Friend of the show.
That's right. That's right. He says hello. Sorry, he couldn't make it today. Jeremy Huspel Spofford and Andrew Shackman. One's a sculptor, one's an architect, and then myself. We're all educators. Mm-hmm. Avery wasn't here because he's teaching today, as a matter of fact. And then we have a number of really amazing, talented staff, from photographers to cultural makers as well. And then we actually brought on, not an artist this time. Usually we have a lead artist. We actually have a lead archivist, Skyla Hearn, who is an amazing archivist and co-founded Blackivist. Mm. And we thought her and her team came in to actually start to think about what does an archive for a floating memorial, floating monument, floating building look like. So we've been working with her for about 2 years. And she'll also be presenting on the 9th. August 9th as well.
Wonderful. So, Rebecca, let's dig more into the loss of this structure and what that really meant for Bronzeville itself, right? Because here we're not just losing Mecca Flats as an apartment building per se, but we're also losing third spaces, right? We end up losing the school across the street, et cetera. Sure. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like Fahim touched on some of these themes in a really beautiful way in thinking about what it means to lose space. And I think it is important, you know, as he was saying, to remember that people carry memory, culture, archive in their own bodies. And so displacement of a building does not necessarily mean displacement of the full memory, but there is something about the physical structure being there that kind of has a concreteness to it that was lost. And, you know, I was thinking about the name Mecca when this kind of set of conversations was starting, and that idea that it's something that your life circumambulates or centers around. Mm. And so that kind of physical access, you know, of a true center point to culture is something that's hard to replace. And the idea that that can just be displaced and relegated to a different neighborhood easily is obviously something urban renewal tried to argue and is certainly not the lived experiences for people that were in that center.
Yeah. Tell us more about the urban renewal efforts back then and just how many people in Chicago were displaced.
Absolutely. You know, it's a certain irony that urban renewal was seen as this form of cleansing. Mm. And it was this idea that these were neighborhoods that were blighted, or these were areas that were, you know, a scorn on society, as it were, you know, which is a really 19th century turned 20th century reapplication of something that, you know, to think that you can erase and start over. Mm-hmm. And going back to that term of erasure, you know, therefore all the memories and culture that was there wasn't worth bringing forward.
I'm sorry, I'm still on the term cleansing. Because
absolutely. And the irony for me is thinking about, you know, in many ways we think about culture as a form of healing, and cleansing and healing feel like they can have some really profound relationship. And how you phrase or how you contextualize those words is everything, right? And so, yeah, you know, this idea of cleansing the land of what was there and starting over tabula rasa fresh. And so, you know, when we see this, urban renewal was specifically targeted for communities of color and of specific communities of economic class that, you know, the city or the federal government argued could be displaced. And so you see targeted movements of bodies, neighborhoods, entire demolition of neighborhoods based on these lines.
Why is now the right time for this project, Fahim?
I just think there's just so much happening in a lot of ways that I think people feel like their voices aren't being heard. And I think Floating Museum, oftentimes, we see ourselves as collaborators in a conversation. We always say we're setting a dinner table for a nice meal for everyone to eat and everyone to bring a dish and everyone to leave fed. So I think this is a part of our ongoing mission of really looking at what's in our backyard and kind of finding ways to draw people out to talk about those things. So one thing, it's a multiplier effect. We're going to put this out in the world. We're going to debut it in August. And the next summer, we're going to start moving around to former sites of housing projects. Mm. right? Drawing back citizens. You know, you go down the street, you see a kind of a raised field of where Ida B. Wells was or Stateway Gardens was, but now you see this building. Well, I'm going to go see that thing. I'm going to share my story. So this is a, it's just something that is a part of our DNA in our art practices.
Yeah.
And we just got tired of waiting around for people to do it. So we just did it ourselves.
Why do you think art was the right medium?
Art is a little bit of a Trojan horse, right? Everyone has a relationship with art. I can talk with people in the neighborhoods, or I can talk with kings or mayors or whatever. Everyone has a relationship with art. Mm-hmm. And it's a way to start to have a dialogue, right? So we go in, we present something, we use spectacle, we use talent, we use art as a way to set the table for a discussion. And it's like planting seeds. We put it out there, mm-hmm. and then hopefully it takes, and then it grows. But it's not our job to grow it. It's the city's job to grow it. It's the community's job to grow it. It's like we have a very important link in the chain, and oftentimes it's to draw attention to right. ideas.
Yeah. You know, Rebecca, there have been numerous urban revitalization projects across the city, you know, similar to what we've been describing. Do you think that the city, though, has learned lessons from the displacement that some of these projects have caused? Like, is there a different approach to revitalizing today?
That's a really great question. You know, because when we talk about urban renewal, as we were just discussing, there's a lot of focus on these kind of demolition and blighted and some really strong words like that. And when we use the term revitalizing, it feels like it's softening what could still be displacement. And I do think a lot of it has to come back to, you know, as Fahim was saying, people and relationship mm-hmm. and the process. And so, you know, I think when people use the term revitalize, there's an intentionality of thinking about what relationship to existing communities can look like through that process. You know, but that being said, I think we also have to recognize revitalization can be hand in hand with gentrification. And so that is a really big challenge that I think there's still need to see if the city has moved past that yeah. as a strategy.
I was wondering when that word was going to come up in this conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and I think there's another term that gets thrown out that is an area of interest for me, which is adaptive reuse and the idea that you can take an existing building, mm-hmm. repurpose it, bring that cultural physical memory forward. And to me, that's also an interesting thing being presented as new. That's really old. I mean, Mecca Flats was in many ways adaptive reuse, right? It was African-American cultural bearers reclaiming a space for their own. And we've seen how that playbook was used in the past against them. So I think there's a lot of room for growth, but maybe room for hope that we can yeah. learn those lessons.
Absolutely. You know, I asked Fahim, you know, why now and why art? Why, in your view, Rebecca, is a project like this one something that makes sense as a monument or a tool for social change?
You know, I absolutely believe that all of us are keepers of memory. And I think we work together in an ecosystem of care for that memory. And so it seems like a time of rapid erasure that we're living through. And so I think the accountability of knowing we can all embody that and preserve that together and decide what that means for the future is something incredibly empowering. And it's something that, at least for me, is a driving force for still waking up in the morning and trying to continue to do this.
Yeah. Fahim, I hear you collaborated with the Chicago Monuments and Memorials mm-hmm. Commission.
Yeah.
Tell me more. What's this group working on?
I was on a commission back around, I think it was around COVID, when the city was reconsidering what we'll call problematic monuments. And there was a lightning rod going around the world mm-hmm. where citizens were really questioning the people that were, you know, being made monuments for, memorials for, and asking questions and then acting on that. Mm-hmm. So a commission was put together by the mayor's office of cultural leaders to kind of discuss these things and then eventually review a number of identified monuments around the city, including the Columbus statue, mm-hmm. right? This is in a lot of ways Floating Museum's response a little bit to that. Mm. We believe in action, not just words. We believe in actually doing something. So the inflatable monument series was a way of actually bringing something spectacular, a series of spectacular things on sides of the city that don't often get those resources because of their proximity to the cultural center in our predominantly Black and Brown communities. And it was a way of kind of speculating what could be. Each of those monuments has a team, a collective of different individuals coming from different communities, expertise, mm-hmm. and we sit, we talk, we eat. And then the outcome of that is what you see, okay? Having it be inflatable and portable means we can be in all of those communities at any given time versus coming and putting one in place. And then it kind of, once again, plants that seed of what could be. When you come and say you're going to put a 30-foot sculpture in someone's backyard in a park, there might be some questions
asked. Might be some conversation.
You know, might be, we're going to have to talk about this, and it probably won't ever happen. But when you come and say, hey, it's just be here for a day, there's nothing lost. So then you leave, and now we can quit. Oh, we see the potential of that. Now let's have the dialogue conversation about who can be memorialized, how it can be done, and who gets to make it. Because it's not just about what it's a monument of, it's also who makes the monument too.
So you use that commission work to inform what you're doing in the present with the Floating Museum.
Absolutely.
We'll leave it there. Fahim Majeed is an artist and co-director of the Floating Museum, and Rebecca Kaufman is a curator of religion and community history architecture at the Chicago History Museum. Thank you both so much for joining us. This episode was produced and mixed by Sienna Greaves and edited by Meha Ahmed. For more conversations about Chicago history, please consider subscribing. You can also check out our archive at wbez.org/reset. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again soon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.